Yeah. This is the National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. The date is April 29, 1985. Judy Rubenstein and Ann Fagan, interviewers, and our subject is Rabbi Fagan. Rabbi, to begin, we'd like you to tell us your impressions about growing up, your immediate family, etc.
I was fortunate to have some wonderful parents and to live in a very, very interesting community. I was born in Springfield, Ohio, but we moved shortly thereafter to Dayton, Ohio. Now my grandparents on my mother's side still lived in Springfield, Ohio for many, many years. And they were very traditional people, lovely people, loving people. So even though my home was reformed, all of the grandchildren used to go up to Springfield for Pesach, and we stayed the full week. My mothers would stay with us, fathers returned to work, but we stayed for a week. And my grandfather was a kind of sweet person with a twinkle in his eye, and he used to sleep upstairs in the attic with about 6 or 8 grandchildren. And that was a time of such great rejoicing and great fun. I even knew my great-grandparents there. So that it was a time of, you got acquainted with your family. Aunts, uncles, cousins, there were 30, 35 people for the Seder. And it was a kind of wonderful, wonderful experience in Judaism, which cannot be taught in books. Now, on the other side of the fence was my grandparents, from Germany. And my parents used to have to sneak out, I understand, in order to go together, because the conflict between these two sides of the fence at that time was very, very strong. But thank goodness they did go out together. And my grandparents on the Reformed German side were actually married here in America, and you know, and their parents were here, and just very, very solidly Jewish. Many people think that Reform was sort of an escape in those days. It really wasn't true. My grandfather, on my father's side, was a Shomer Shabbos in his own way. I mean, he did not work. He closed down his business on Saturday. But he didn't hesitate to take my sister and I, with my sister and me, to a picture show on Shabbos afternoon. In the morning, we would go with them to the Reformed Temple. And in the afternoon, there was always a battle to see whether we would go to the Western or to the Love Picture. And my grandfather went along with either one. It was very lovely. And I had a sister who was only 1 year and 8 months older than I. Who is probably one of the sweetest human beings I've ever met. Still is.
Do you have some recollection of the Jewish community, either in Springfield or in Dayton, as you remember things at church?
I actually have recollections of both. In Springfield, my Orthodox grandparents used to go play bridge with other couples. You know, they weren't that foreign, quote, they could play pinochle and so forth, but they had a bridge game with some other couples their age, and they were very, very lovely, up-to-date, modern people. She was, Grandma Friedman was more, may she rest in peace, was more the cooker, baker. And my grandfather, I used to go with him occasionally to his shul. It was really like a shtubula, like a little room, honestly, where there was a purgatory, where there was a stove on which everybody would gather around to keep warm. And it was and they had such wonderful sense of humor. You know, they were, I still think it's beautiful to go to a minyan today and see early in the morning the quality of humor and the love of life of these older men. Is something very rare. It's very beautiful to see. My birth was November 15th, 1919. My Orthodox, quote, Russian, Polish grandparents were Abraham and Fanny Friedman. The grandparents on the other side, mostly from Germany or from the German part of Poland, Jajowicz, I think, is the way the name was probably pronounced. You mean the way it was originally spelled?
Yes.
S-H-A-I-O-V-I-T-C-H, Jajowicz. Actually, it means son of Yishayahu, Isaiah. Shai is short for Yishayahu. So it meant really son of Yishayahu, of Isaiah. And on the, so it was my grandmother's name was Rosa Sajovic, S-A-J-O-V-I-T-C. See, I finally did something. Okay, from the V to the W, because it was always pronounced W and spelled with a V, so everyone was spelling the name wrong. So I decided to change it when we got married. So, the Grandma Rosie, by the way, and my grandfather, Isaac. I never met the Sajewitz again, maybe one family in my life, until I went to Israel. And I found in Israel five or six Shayaviches, or Shavits, you know, pronounced many different things. We never found out if we were really relations, but all of our, there was a sort of Hungarian village coming in there someplace, but all of our names of the children in the family were very similar. Hmm. My uncles and aunts, etc., very, very similar names to them. So I now have an Orthodox rabbi from Brooklyn whom I call cousin. And we visited there several times, and it's like meeting old family again. It's just lovely. Well, let's go back, all right?
Sure.
My grandma Rosie was about 5 feet tall. A character. A person who loved to go play bingo every night. They had the energy of unbelievable energy. When I was 13, she was then not young, she took me as a bar mitzvah present to the World's Fair. We had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. We came home at 7, absolutely exhausted. And she went out to play poker. That's Grandma Rosie. Oh, lovely, lovely. She took all the satyrs at the temple and would schlep things in market baskets. No one could pick her up. You know, I go back to the old days where they had the house, and it was a horse in the back yet, and they had to pump the water. And she would do the clothes with boiling water. She would do everything herself. Nothing was too much. Even when she was much older, could barely get around, she would get around. Her tears would end up in the matzah soup at the temple because it wasn't as good as it used to be. But they named the kitchen Rosa's Sajewitz Kitchen in the Reform Temple. And the strange thing is those two families, the Orthodox and Russian and the German and the Reform, really joined together. It was the loveliest thing to see. We would always be with the Orthodox friends, with the Reform, and the first and the traditional on the second. It was just, or it was reversed sometimes, but there was, the families were integrated as one. The whole Mishugasakas, the Orthodox Reform, that disappeared. I don't mean it disappeared, that they still were what they were, but the animosity between the Mishugasakas long, long disappeared. Just a, you know, I had to very fortunate to grow from a loving family. Now, my mother had been ill for many, many years, and then a woman. And she died at 52. And because of that, my sister was sort of a little mother. Strange, she was a little mother to me when I was young, and yet when I grew up, we used to double date together. She was very active in DBG, and I was ACA, and we used to have lots of things. We never had a lot of money. That was very strange. We always lived in big homes, and you know, in those days you always had somebody working for you, if it was $5 a week, whatever it was, and it was, oh golly, our house was always full, with people coming to visit with kids we could have over. It was, you're very fortunate in this sense.
Did you,
as
a child, ever think about being
from
the rabbin? Did you ever think of rabbin?
Oh, definitely. I announced it in my bar mitzvah speech. And I think my father almost fainted. As he had dreams of taking me into his father's business, which had been originally a scrapyard and some waste paper, and then grew into big trucks in the, you know, because I used to get the things from McCall's Pattern, you know, big plants. So they had a five-story plant, big block that I would go in. And I, my father every summer would have me come and work on almost all the way through school because he wanted to convince me that I should go in there. And yet, I'm not sure it's because I could play baseball, but for sure, or not. That was the only way to play is if you went to the shul. But I went to cheder, you know, in those days there was not even a Hebrew club. Mm-hmm. So for my for one side's favor, I went to the cheder. And on Sunday I would go to religious, to Sunday school, at the Reform Temple. So I got the mixture all the way through, and thank God. Except for one reason, my father wanted to be so much a 200% American. He was American born, so forth. As many people felt it, this was the Palestine of their lives. This was what they had dreamed of. So the result was that he forbade my grandparents to be Jewish American. Oh, what a loss. But yeah, Dad too, he was the sovereign. He was the kind of person really that was very mushy inside and very tough outside. Very tough. But we would go out in the car. We hated to drive, but he would take us for a ride. Mother loved to drive. And we would end up singing together songs. Let me call you sweetheart. You know, it was a good childhood in a very positive sense, except I was gothic. I was 150 when I was born, but, and mischievous. But I wanted to be somehow, you know, this is so true. I don't know how I realized it, not subconscious. I felt in my grandparents, the Russian home, fully American, but I thought, you know, here was a man, my grandfather, came over to this country. He lost a mother and a sister in the pogrom. And he came over, I'm sure, with a tremendously anti-hatred of the Christian in the churches. And yet he took a horse and buggy and went to the little small village is near Springfield. And lo and behold, it came Shabbos, he couldn't get home. We learned to know those families. And strangely enough, years later when we became very ill, I had to go to the hospital. There too. Mm-hmm. We met all the tricks with the hands that the grandfathers played. This is a lot.
You've spoken so lovingly of your parents and grandparents. Were there other childhood figures whom you remember as being particularly important to you?
I had one Hebrew teacher who was a great, you see, you must remember, what happened to me is the shul issued an edict that we have to submit the anti-reform edict. If you go to our synagogue 2 days a week to Hebrew school, 3 days, whatever it was, you have to go on Sunday. Oh. Or else, get out. So, I got out about 6 months before my bar mitzvah, and I had a marvelous Hebrew teacher, whom I then stayed with all the way through high school. But he was a Hebrew teacher. He was a modern Hebrew teacher. He loved great literature. He taught Bible too, but there was someone very, very special. I knew his faults. He was, of course, the greatest ice skater in the world, the greatest this, the greatest that. That went along with the teaching, but he had something to get. So he was incredible.
What about memories of historical events? Remember events happening in the larger world?
No. I'm sure I remember Prohibition. My bar mitzvah was in Prohibition, so my father had to get hold of illegal schnapps in order to have a bar mitzvah. You know, and we had that my bar mitzvah somehow was held. Nonetheless, even though I was expelled from the Hebrew school, I either had to do both or else, but I had it at the shul. I had my bar mitzvah. There were no reform bar mitzvahs at that time. Or at least not in the day. So I had it there in the shul, the days of Prohibition. And it was a lively, it's a lively evening. Again, we weren't rich, but we saved, everyone brought food together. It was things. Well, my father was the kind of guy who was taking me on fishing trips during the summer. Believe it or not, I was a wrestling fan long before it became popular, because we used to go. He was a wrestler. Good for his temper, but against good for his
temper. Can you talk to us now about your schooling, both as a little boy and as you think about the seminary?
Every class I ever went to, they said, oh, you're Isabel Butler. Because Isabel was top-notch in February. And a lovely, well-behaved human being, and I couldn't stop talking in class. So that my conduct was not too well received, and I had many occasions to have my parents invited to school, but from the standpoint of academics, I was able to stay with my sister, and in fact, she was very angry with me because she was a person who sat and studied. And thank goodness I really didn't have it. And the result was, when I was young, I had a pot stand, I mowed lawn, shoveled snow.
Were the teachers who influenced you particularly, apart from the Hebrew teacher that you spoke of earlier?
Well, no, I had determined. When I was 13, I was already set to be a rabbi. And I, there was no rejoicing. But I think my grandparents were very happy. When I was in high school, there was one teacher that was a blind teacher, the first blind teacher to get a PhD. She had a habit of assigning everyone every week. I had to read, when they read their history, I had to be able to get up and tell it, explain it. And no notes. And she could tell if your head was down, you were reading from the notes, she could detect it. And she called me her little rabbit, her little rabbi, you know, it was adorable. And years later, I would go see her, Dr. Brown, see my dog. She lectured all over the country later. And she used to call me her little Billy. It was a lovely, lovely
thing. Impressions that you remember from the seminary? Shame for the rabbit.
I have to tell you. When it came time to try out for a Christmas play, a play at Christmas time in school, the three of us won parts, the three wise kings, three Jews, and I was a narrator, and I get a note passed up to me, Rabbi Sage, you went to school. Anyway, it was a good experience, good job, good experience. My father, one of the summers, he said, go ahead. He was then had to handle wiping rags. He would go to sell into a station. Me, I got tired of selling to stations. I go into National Cash Register. I come out with a 3-carload order. My father almost died because he couldn't furnish it. But it was crazy. Not judaically very important.
But I'm fine. But tell us about you.
Yeah. But these were people, again, who couldn't afford much. And did everything possible to see that I went to school. Fortunately, I was able to scholarship, you know, so that was really good. But at school, I was in charge of the gym, not because of my athletic skill, but because I knew somebody. Okay. And incidentally, I used to take Heschel down to the gym. He must have weighed about 190 pounds, something like that. And I used to take him down privately with other people and work him out. Did you see Heschel? Heschel ended up weighing 135 pounds later. I was weighing 190.
Let's talk about the end of high school journey.
The truth is, I never enjoyed a college kind of experience because I was taking about 28 hours between taking both of them combined. 10% of the class used to come in as undergraduates.
This was where?
I had a year at University of Dayton, and then I had 4 years at the University of Cincinnati and Hebrew Union College combined. It used to be that if you took 4 years of that and then 4 more, you would be able to graduate college and Hebrew Union College in 9 years if you took that accelerated course. If not, it used to be a BA plus 6. Mind you, we didn't even get a PhD, we ended up with a master's. But I was... I think I disliked the college so much that I took some summer work and I managed to get out of it. Now the one amazing thing you have here, which is so much fun, I was president of the student body in my junior year. This was wartime. The first he's asking what effect is this. But war was on. And they were accelerating college courses, they were accelerating medical school courses, so because they needed people to go in. And We decided that it wasn't fair. That we should somehow be able to. First of all, we couldn't go in as chaplains, but they were waiting for rabbis to go, and they couldn't leave their pulpits. So we felt that if we could go and do some work during the summer anyway, that we would be able to relieve these people and then do our work somehow. In the summers, while we were there, and lo and behold, we decided there was only one way to do it. I went into the president, who had wanted me to change my name to Sage. Dr. Morgenstern was a very fine product of Reform Home, who had gotten his PhD in Germany, excelled in Germany, and was a lovely southern gentleman, a fine human being. But he was anti-Zionist at that time, as was my father. And I went out with the blue boxes just the same. So my father and I didn't agree all the time. And the day that the Board of Governors met, we all pulled out of classes all of a sudden. We all had signs prepared. The army needs rabbis. And we paraded singing around the boardroom, and they called it in, asked what it was, and I pleaded with them to let us take this accelerated course, worked in the summer, and so forth. And they voted to do it, and the president was burning up. He was very aggravated because we had talked about it, and he said, no. So I got a position then from San Antonio, Texas. Married from 24 years old. See, I planned to get married that summer, and Ruth would have worked for a year while I finished up. I met her. Her brother, you may know, was a very famous conservative rabbi author, Sam Dresner, in Theodore Kossigism. So he picks me up with his daughter with his sister on a blind date on his birthday. That was the end of that. We met in November, we were married in August. But we were engaged in March.
Was she living in Cincinnati?
No, in Chicago. And I had to play two numbers so much in order to go back and forth. When I finally came to one of my colleagues who was a favorite contributor, came up, I said, look, I have to. We have to sit down. I want to go up and I want to get engaged. He said, do me a favor. I'll pay for the corsage. Go. Go. Don't take our time. So that's how we courted. And then we went to San Antonio, Texas, 44 years ago. Congregation of 400 families, executive director. Religious school secretary. I never thought I'm going to sit down and dictate. It was quite an experience.
What was it like, a Jewish congregation in San Antonio with such a young man? What were some of the challenges you had to encounter?
You never believe. This was an ultra reformed congregation. And I mean ultra reformed. In fact, they had a constitution which said that the board members had to be, membership was handed down from generation to generation. I was supposed to be there just to be helpful. So I called the national administrator of the union to survey the board's needs, meeting the whole constitution and everything. Well, my successor was in service. I don't think there was a love affair. But you too are the final gentleman. Now, we're in San Antonio, Texas.
May we back up just a bit? you've talked about your experiences in the seminary. Do you feel the seminary education has changed a great deal?
I hope so. I hope so. I remember telling John Stein when he was going to the Union College, he used to come here, very discouraged. I remember he spoke about it right a few months ago when there was a Grobar session, the whole region, and he was president of the region then. And he was speaking as, you know, with my retirement plan. He helped me, he saved me, because I told him what was very true. Strangely enough, it was the only spiritual place to be in God. The least spiritual place in the world. Because you had faculty members there who were teaching subjects. And not all of them were spiritual human beings. They were stopped.